This is Jim Fetzer, your host on a Real Deal Special Report, where my guest today is among the most brilliant critics of the role of Israel in relation to the United States. He published an extraordinarily insightful book, A Host and a Parasite, that everyone ought to read. And I'm just extremely pleased to have him here in an era where Israel is showing its true colors, its real face, with the ongoing slaughter, the genocide of the Palestinian people, for which there is no conceivable warrant. This is in violation of international law, the Geneva Convention, the Hague Convention, ordinary principles of human decency. Israel has already lost its standing among nations. Israel will never be able to play the victim card again because Israel is treating the Palestinians the way they claim falsely the Germans treated them in World War II. His name, Greg Felton. Greg, this is a great pleasure, especially in this time of stress where there's nothing more important in my judgment than the world understanding the true nature of the beast known as Israel.
Well, to a large extent, I would submit that most people do know what Israel is, to at least to some degree, but a lot of them lack the courage to do anything about it, much less speak about it. I mean, what's happened to the world and has been happening progressively for decades is that we are living under a new religious orthodoxy where it is wrong, it is illegal virtually, especially in the excited states of America, to criticize Israel. This is like living in the Middle Ages with the Catholic Church terrorizing people who dare speak out against the papal orthodoxy. We are living in a world where Holocaustianity is the dogma that everybody has to internalize, that Israel is like the glorified church of the world of Holocaustianity. The Prime Minister of Israel is like the Pope. The various lobbyists in various Western countries are the various bishops and archbishops that enforce the dictates of the imperial homeland. We live in a world that is far from any democratic utopia or democratic ideal that we claim to represent. Now, what's happened, and you're right, Israel has forever consigned itself to ignominy, that by attacking and massacring Arabs en masse, it has admitted to the world that it has no connection to international law, to human decency, and that it has no right to exist, despite the fact that these are the lies that we've been brought up to believe. Now, this is ironically, and this is a sad thing, is that nothing is really new here. This has been going on piecemeal and sotto voce, like under the table, for decades. But now Israel has decided to go full terrorism to destroy a people that have done nothing wrong except exist on a land that biblical mythology consigns to the Jews. I mean, there is no going back for Israel. Israel has consigned itself to destruction, politically, morally, intellectually. Israel is dead. It is a shell of a farce. It's like Nazi Germany in March 1945. It's a dying empire. The only question is, nobody has the balls to go in and say that. Even now, I mean, we have the European Union threatening to strip. No, that's a different story. Sorry, back that up. Even now, the United States, the UN, and Britain are banning Jewish colonists from the occupied territories. Canada, to its shame, is still waffling. Well, we got to decide if this is the right thing. Woof, woof, woof. Eventually, push will come to shove, and every nation on earth is going to say, we cannot sit by and watch women and children, 68% of the victims are women and children, be massacred by a professional army. It's just it beggars the imagination. And what's worse, we have the prestitutes who are concocting sophistries to justify slandering people who defend Palestine and criticize Israel. This is the canard of anti-Semitism, which is a nonsense word, really. It was invented in 1873 by a German bigot named Wilhelm Marr to stigmatize Jews as a people. Now, Jews are not a people, they're a religious group. I mean, you don't say that Christians belong to one ethnic origin. They don't. Neither do Muslims, neither do Buddhists. Well, but Jews, oh, they're freaking special. Well, they're not. Jews are not a people. The only people who consider them to be a people are Zionists and Nazis, and both of whom are fruit of the poisonous tree of fascism. What we have now, as you see, is the true fascist nature of Israel. This is Hitler's bastard, is what I call it. Hitler gave rise to Israel. Without Hitler, there would be no Israel. Israel is Hitler's bastard, and the midwife was Great Britain. How's that sound?
Yes. I think you're spot on, Greg.
So what I'm hoping to do is one of the things that is curious about this is that Israel's legitimacy is entirely a function of image. We have the poor, pathetic little Jew who can't find security in a Christian world, so he has to move to the Middle East and occupy Palestine. So the cult of the Jew as victim is what has been driving Israel since its, well, alleged inception. But what people may not know is that the resolution of 181 from November 29th, 1947, which ostensibly created Israel, nicknamed the Partition Plan, was never passed. It only got through the General Assembly, but it was never passed, never ratified by the Senate, I'm sorry, the Security Council. What am I thinking of? The Security Council did not ratify it because Harry Truman, who was president of the United States at the time, refused to allow it to go to a vote. Do you know why?
No.
Well, Harry Truman did not want the United States to go down in history as sanctioning a genocide. Harry Truman knew what was going on. His ambassador, Warren Austin of the United Nations, was livid at the violence being perpetrated against the Arabs. He told Truman that the Jewish state, so-called, could not be created without violence, and he urged the United States not to approve it. Truman, to his credit, did not allow the vote to go ahead. So technically, the resolution that created Israel does not exist. It has no standing in law. It's like building a castle on quicksand. Israel has no legitimacy. And what's even worse is that Israel's vote for state for partition narrowly passed in the General Assembly. And it only passed because three nations, Liberia, the Philippines, and Haiti, were blackmailed by the United States into changing their votes. They didn't want to. The pressure from the US Congress, from US representatives, was oppressive. The countries that had voted against partition were threatened with loss of Marshall aid, Marshall Plan aid after the war. The representatives were in tears when they told the Palestinian delegate they were forced to change their votes. So, on the one hand, Israel had no authority to form a state in Palestine. And the legitimacy given by the United Nations did not exist. And what's curious about that particular fact is that at the time, there was severe problems at the UN about just how transparently violent, rhetorically violent, the American pressure was. And one of the difficulties was that there was a concern that the integrity of the United Nations would be called into question. And this is going back to 1948. The United Nations had only been invented in 1945. So 3 years into its mandate, the United Nations was essentially a dead let, it was essentially a fraud. It had sold out its principles. It didn't. So this is this why the United Nations is such a freaking joke. It stands for international law. It stands for justice, morality, and all sorts of happy things like that. But it was blackmailed into permitting Palestine to be bisected into Jewish and non-Jewish territory, even though the United Nations had no authority to do it in the first place. The UN does not have the authority to take land from one person, one group of people, to give it another. It doesn't have that authority. So the question is, how did this get so far? Even the State Department of the United States had the following comment. A policy group at the department said, quote, "The prestige of the UN would suffer because of the notoriety and resentment attendant upon the activities of US pressure groups, including members of Congress who sought to impose US views as to partition on foreign delegations." That comes from John Quigley's book, Palestine and Israel: A Challenge to Justice. The history of Israel's criminality and the US's gangsterism is on the public record, but no one knows that public record exists. Now, to make matters even worse, Israel was admitted to the UN in 1949, on May the 11th, I think, or May 18th, I forget the date. But the point is, it was done according to UN General Assembly Resolution 273. Now, membership resolutions don't require the Security Council. It's just a matter for the members of the General Assembly and the Secretariat. But you see, 273 had an embedded clause that it compelled Israel to abide by the terms of Resolution 194, which it already promised to do. And Resolution 194 allowed Palestinians to return to their homes and receive compensation. Israel signed that. And has that ever happened? I don't think so. So really, if you want to be strictly accurate about it, Israel has never lived up to the terms of its admission. So Israel is not a legitimate member of the United Nations, because it did not live up to its terms under Resolution 273. So, any member of the United Nations, and this is what I want anyone to do who's within earshot of this interview, I want you to go to any supportive UN mission or foreign government and ask the representative to demand that the United Nations enforce its own rules and expel Israel. No vote is necessary, because Israel joined the UN under the promise of being a peace-loving state and allowing the Palestinians to return. That's it. It has never done that. It's been a scofflaw from the moment it stepped into the UN, and nobody has done anything about it. Today, with the conspicuous massacre of Arabs in Gaza, how can anybody allow this to continue? Israel has made the colossal mistake of committing intellectual and moral suicide. There is no going back from this. You can't get worse than bombing women and children in hospitals, bombing schools, kidnapping children, and abusing them for God knows how long. Israel has no claim to be part of the human race. Israel is a cancer on the world, and it's time the world applied surgical techniques to get rid of the cancer. And as I said, anyone who can hear me and who cares about Palestine demand that the UN uphold its own regulations. And I'm going to send Jim in the chat my article. Oh, Jim has my article, don't you?
Send it again, and I'll link it or add it to the description. Yes.
Yeah, the thing is, you see, in 2009, which seems like forever ago, I wrote a sat I published a satire, and the satire was a speech by Ban Ki-moon. And I did this as a satire because anybody knows that the United States countries don't have the courage to do the right thing. So what I've done is I wrote a satirical speech about what Ban Ki-moon, as the former Secretary General of the United Nations, ought to say. Oh, I can't send it in the chat. It won't allow me to.
I got it. I've already got it, Greg. We're good.
Okay. And I put this into the chat, and I published this in 2009, May 11th. It was May 11th, 2009. It was the 60th anniversary of Israel's admission. And it was one of the most interesting things I'd ever done. It's always gratifying as a writer to see your writing have an effect on people. But after I published it, there was a minor scandal on the internet. And I'm told, and I'm just told by people who read this, that for 2 days the United Nations was in an uproar, demanding that Ban Ki-moon apologize or recount for his speech, in which he essentially said, Israel has no right to stay in the United Nations. For 60 years, we have turned aside, we've looked the other way. Well, genocide has been taking place, but now it's too much. 60 years, time for Israel to be given the boot. That's a bit of a condensation. But if you want to read it, Jim will put it up on the website, and you should have a look at it. Because it tells you a history that nobody knows. I mean, if you were to ask the average person today, do you know how Israel was admitted to the UN? And I would venture that nobody knows that Israel is the only state ever to have been admitted on a condition, and it's failed to live up to it. I found this to be quite interesting because, I was interviewed by two Jewish newspapers, and each of the interviews was very positive. They thought it was hilarious. They congratulated me on doing what everybody else does, and they condemned their own kind for overreacting to it. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the responses that I got from this. It was absolutely hysterical. Anyway, please make an effort to tell your not your, the American government's basically a waste of space. It's occupied by Israel. Pat Buchanan was right. Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. But the governments of Ireland, Turkey, Iceland, for example, would be amenable, I believe, to pressure to compel the United Nations to expel Israel. And I don't see how Israel could refuse. Already, Israel has got its knickers in a twist over Russia and the head of the United Nations, a head of the UN. Israel wants the head of the UN removed because it's not Zionist enough for them. Well, maybe this is something that the head of the UN needs to get rid of Israel. He doesn't have to vote, doesn't have to do anything, just has to enforce his laws. What are the odds of that happening, do you think, Jim?
Well, under the circumstances, I got to tell you, Greg, they're greater than zero.
Well, that's definitely a positive comment, anyway.
I think such a thing could happen because there's universal outrage. And Greg, you may or may not be aware, but Christopher Busby has now discovered evidence that the Israelis have used neutron uranium bombs on Gaza and on Lebanon. In others, they've been nuking the Palestinian people, which was suggested very short time ago by a local leader in Israel. They have been doing it. This ought to generate enormous outrage. And for that reason, among all the others, the ongoing genocide, Israel most certainly, clearly deserves to be expelled. And I suspect 154 of the nations belonging to the UN would be supportive, just as they have calling for a ceasefire.
Well, that it would not surprise me in the least, because as I'm writing another book right now. It's about media and the prostitutes who are betraying their profession to cover up great crimes against humanity. And one of the ones that I'm picking up again is the World Trade Center attack. Now, a lot of people probably don't want to talk about it. For a lot of people, this is just ancient history. A new building has gone up with the rather Orwellian moniker of Freedom Tower. Blah. But what people don't realize is that the official narrative is patently absurd. Not just because people don't want to believe it, but it's physically impossible. And this is one of the narratives that I'm demolishing in my book to show that because of these narratives, the fact of the narrative has had a pernicious influence throughout time from the moment of the narrative. Because of the World Trade Center attack, ostensibly, we had the Patriot Act about 6 weeks later. We had the massacre of Afghanistan, later Iraq. If it hadn't been for the World Trade Center demolition, that wouldn't have happened. But as people may or may not know, I mean, Philip Zelikoff, who is a professional liar in the Bush government, or the Cheney government, let's be realistic here, had already written the first draft of the Patriot Act before the attack took place. So this whole thing was,
And
huh?
Gregory Zelikow, who became the executive director when Kissinger declined the honor because it would have entailed revealing his financial entanglements, which he desperately did not want to make public, is a professor of history at the University of Virginia today, where I taught twice in the past as a visiting professor in the Department of Philosophy. And his area of specialization before entering government was the creation and maintenance of public myths,
That's right.
MYTHS. And that's exactly what he gave us with the 9/11 report, which, as you are observing, the first draft of which he completed a year before he shared it with the other members. He is my candidate, Greg, for having scripted the 9/11 event. Philip Zelikow himself. Who better to put in charge of the commission investigating to guarantee it would be unsuccessful in revealing how it was done?
Well, what's interesting about Zelikow when he wrote this is his great myth. He manufactured the myth, like for a lot of things. But what people don't know is that the structure of the World Trade Center was so well done. It was such a solid piece of construction that no aircraft could possibly have brought it down. And so the question is, how is it possible that a building with 47, and I'm going to tell you 47 steel columns in the center could have collapsed onto its footprint like a Jenga game? How could it have done that? Well, it couldn't have. Even if a plane had caused damage, the external walls would have kept the building's in superficial integrity. I mean, there would have been no collapse. There had to have been something in the building to undermine the foundation so that the building could have collapsed onto itself. And what has not been reported in any substantive way is that the buildings were at the base of the towers and up a couple of stories, miniature nuclear bombs were planted there. And the nuclear bombs were the only force that could have undermined those 47 steel columns. And what I found in my research, there was a man who was working at the ba in the basement of the World Trade Center Tower 1, and he was victimized by he had radiation burns. Who would get radiation burns from being in the basement of a World Trade Center? I mean, that
Rick,
doesn't make any
I just
sense.
want to confirm you're spot on about all this. I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in 2005. I brought together hundreds of experts from around the world. When Alex Jones held his American Scholars Conference in June of 2006, he invited me to be the keynote speaker. And when on Sunday there was a panel of four, they were all members of my society, moderated by Alex Jones, which C-SPAN recorded and then broadcast 7 or 8 times, and subsequent research has substantiated precisely what you're saying. These were mini nukes in a sub-basement. The buildings were a tube within a tube. It destroyed the inner tube from the ground up and then blew apart the outer tube from the top down. All the floors remained stationary. There was no collapse, converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And what was over, there was no pile of debris. We know, contrast with Building 7, 47 floors, classic controlled demolition, all the floors coming down at the same time, not blowing apart in every direction, not being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, 5.5 floors of debris, because the formula is 12% of the original height, in that case, 47. There ought to have been. Had the Twin Towers got 13.5 floors of debris for each, which were not there. You are spot on.
Thank you. By the way, the man I was talking about who had the radiation burns is called Felipe David, and he was found by a survivor of the blast called William Rodriguez, and he was taken to New York Hospital. So we have, and I have actual quotations from other people who were in Building 7 attesting to the heat, but no fire at the base of the tower. And now, to this day, official narrative states that, oh, planes hit the building, they were flown by Muslim terrorists, yada, yada, waza, waza. This is patent rubbish. The only people who had access to the World Trade Center who could have done this are people who work for Israel or the Central Intelligence Agency or for some other private security firm. We know that Marvin Bush, George Bush's older, somewhat smarter brother, was the head of security at the World Trade Center. And before the bombs were planted on the weekend, he called a security stand down, and all the bomb sniffing dogs were removed. So the buildings were set to be imploded, virtually melted. And of course, Giuliani, who was the mayor of New York, he saw to it that the steel wreckage was shipped off to China and India to be reprocessed into cars or some other such device. So Giuliani is guilty of conspiracy to commit a mass murder, and he should be arrested for it. I'd love to see Giuliani arrested. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. So, I mean, Israel is at the root of probably 90%, I would say the vast majority of world violence committed by the United States, not for American interests, but for Israeli interests, because the Israelis have bought and paid for Congress and the White House. They're like a cancer that has infected every aspect of American public life. And right now in Palestine, we're seeing that cancer essentially burn itself out. And I just would like to know when Great Britain, France, and Germany are going to find their collective balls, take them out of hock, and do what they should have done decades ago. I mean, France and Britain fought the rise of Adolf Hitler in 1939. Why are they not fighting to defend Palestine in 2023? This is preposterous. And we know that because they're being blackmailed by Israel, and that Israel has nuclear weapons that are pointed at European capitals in case any European government decides to do the right thing and hold the Zionist entity to account for its atrocities.
And of course, you're talking there about the Samson option, Greg, and in my view, it's a matter of having the nukes already in the embassies of the major cities of the European capitals and in many cities in the United States, brought in diplomatic pouches, which are not subject to surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
Before I understand, we have the technique, the ability to detect nuclear weapons, and that we know where they are. The problem is, the Bush admin is dominated by Israel. You're absolutely correct. Our Congress is Israeli-occupied territory, as Cynthia McKinney explained about the pledge on Iranian television in 2011 that new members of Congress or SS signed a pledge to put the interests of Israel even ahead of those of the United States, which means we don't have control of our own government. Our commander-in-chief might as well be identified as Bibi Netanyahu. And if you look at what's going on today, that makes a great deal more sense than to suggest that this walking mummy, this utter incompetent who appears to be wired up, who's not even the real Joe Biden from Delaware, is calling any shots. He's not. Bibi is.
Yeah, it's the thing is, Israel has always been in control of the United States ever since Harry Truman took his famous bribe in 1948. You know that, right? $2 million was put into a suitcase. It was given to Truman on his train. This is in Kennedy's own memoirs. And from that moment, that was what I called the first stage of the Zionization of America. My book, The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America, which is available at moneytreepublishing.com. I show that because of Truman, the United States sold out its integrity, not because it had a political reason to do so, but because Truman needed the money. He needed to fight Thomas Dewey, the New York governor, who was set to take over government because Truman was loathed. He was extremely unpopular. Nobody thought he was. When that famous picture of him holding up, I think it was the Chicago Sun-Times, Truman, Dewey beats Truman. It was like, it was, nobody expected it. But because Truman supported partition, the Jewish vote went to Truman, not to Dewey. And the Lubavitcher Jews in New York, the crazy Lubavitchers, they were key to this. And so from that moment on, Israel, America became midwife to a war crime. It took a little while for Israel to consolidate its control over the United States. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower, one of the better presidents of the United States, got his knickers really in a twist when Israel, France, and Great Britain invaded Egypt because of the and created the Suez Crisis. That was one of the few times Israel was told, get your ass out of there or else. And it did. It behaved like a junior partner. It did what it was told. Now, Israel is the dominant player, even though the alleged country is very small. And I've said this before on other shows that Israel is not so much a country as is an international criminal organization. It's like, as I say, a cancer that has cells and that has metastasized throughout the Western world, particularly, so that it is now in control of the United States, Canada, the UK, and who knows how many other countries. The Anglo-American world is really the worst part of the world because they have sold out to Israel for political self-interest. I mean, we have the crazy Christians who think they have some sort of, I don't know, affinity with Jews against Muslims, and that sort of maintains that facade, that sort of marriage of convenience. But there really is nothing to justify the way the Western world, particularly the Anglo-American world, is doing nothing to hold Israel accountable. Israel is really in charge of much of the world. And what's really offensive about it, particularly offensive, is that it was allowed to happen. I mean, people did this with their eyes open. And it's the how can I put this? The sort of pseudo affinity between Jews and Christians against Muslims that gives them this sort of support. I mean, the Christian Zionists are more Jewish than they are Christian. I mean, they go by the Old Testament and this nonsense about the Messiah coming, blah, blah, woof, woof. And so they think, well, we got to get all the Jews back in Palestine. So they form an alliance, and they are rife in the Anglo-American world. And that's why Israel gets as much support as it does. Because the Christian Zionists are the only people, to all intents and purposes, that will give the Zionists the time of day. Even Jews are now standing up to Israel, which kind of puts the lie to the notion that somehow Israel is a Jewish state. It isn't. It was never a Jewish state. It was a Western colonial Jewocracy. And this is what we have to let people know. It's a Jewocracy, not a Jewish state. Because that would imply it was a theocracy. And since Jews are not an ethnic people, as Shlomo Sand has proven, and as anybody with any understanding of genetics knows, is patently ridiculous, then we have to acknowledge that Israel's claim to existence is based upon a nonsense. There is no Jewish state. It's a Jewocracy. And because of that, it's very easy for Israel to kill Jews, because for them, a Jew is just a cipher. It's just something that they could point to and say, he has more rights than this non-Jew. But really, when push comes to shove, Israel has no interest in Jews per se. It has only interest in perpetuating its illegitimate political control over Palestine. Anything else, Jim?
Oh, Greg, I agree with everything you've been saying here. Absolutely 100%. I think you're spot on. And I know your book is, in my opinion, historic because you lay out the case so clearly. for the way in which Israel seeks to exploit the United States as a resource, Bibi himself having said, America is the golden calf. We're going to suck it dry and cut it into parts and leave it as the world's largest welfare state because that's what we do with nations we hate. And yet this is a man who's supposed to be the strongest ally of the United States when he, in fact, is willing to use us to promote the interests of Israel, especially by drawing our armed forces into the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran, because of which it said in a humorous vein, the national anthem of Israel is Onward Christian Soldiers.
Well, the funny thing about Middle East and Arab states, what I find rather distressing but not surprising is that Palestine has not elicited more support and response from the Arab world. Now, if you look at the wealthy nations like Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, these are countries that are run by plutocratic sheikhs, and they care more about making money than any putative support for Arab suffering. I mean, who's going to come to the aid of Palestine or Iraq? I mean, where's the support for that? If you do that, then you're going to offend Israel. You're going to offend the excited states of America. And if you do that, maybe you're going to hurt your own economic self-interest. And so Arab states are not doing anything to help Palestine. Well, they'll offer a little bit of rhetorical tut-tut Israel, very, very bad, bad, bad Jewish state. But that's about as far as they're going to go. They're not going to do anything substantive. And it's necessary, as I said earlier in the program, that Israel's image as a legitimate nation needs to be fundamentally destroyed. And that means kicking the bastard thing out of the United Nations. It has no right to be there. It lied to get in. It was put in there by blackmail. That's it. And so people, please read the piece that Jim is going to put up on the website. Remember, it's satire, and it says satire through it. I didn't try to, it was not a hoax, despite what a bunch of Zionist critics would have said. A lot of people said it was a forgery, it was a hoax. It's none of those. It was a satire. And you know, satire works in a society where there is no real difference between fact and fiction, between justice and injustice. I mean, George Orwell said that satire was the weapon of the weak man, because that's all he has left is to make fun of the world around him. I don't like to think of myself as weak, really. But I did find that by doing it the way I did, rather than write a straight essay, it had much more effect. So please, please have a look at it after the show is over.
Greg, when I publish this, I will be sure to include it in the body of the description so everyone will have access to it. And I got to say how much I admire you for your integrity speaking out at a time when you would be subjected potentially to enormous attacks from the Israeli side, because what they do not want most of all is for the truth to emerge. And in relation to the creation of Israel and its standing among nations, you are a veritable fountain of truth, and thus to be guarded against, suppressed, denied, attacked, minimized, trivialized. They're going to use every weapon in their arsenal, every arrow in their quiver against you, Greg Felton, as a speaker of truth about Israel in relation to Palestine on the one hand and America on the other?
Well, the thing is, it's one thing to, you know, to be right on the right side of history and to understand what's going on. It's quite another to compel people to act on it. There's a great line in the first Sherlock Holmes movie starring Robert Downey Jr. Now, I know these aren't even remotely like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's novels, and really Guy Ritchie took a lot of liberties with these. I mean, he did not do right by Conan Doyle. These are like fictionalized, you know, Sherlock Holmes fiction. But I loved the show because it was so well acted and so cleverly done. There's a character in there called Lord Coward. Love that name. And he has this great line. He's in his office and he's going to try to kill Sherlock Holmes. And I don't recall the exact quotation, but it's something like, how sad it is when wisdom brings no profit to the wise. I mean, it's one thing to be right, but what do you do about it? Now, I'm trying
well,
to
Greg,
get in.
That's an obligation for every individual, but they need to have a correct understanding of the historical situation in order to appraise the situation as it exists in reality, and then to marshal their resources into what they, in collusion with others or independently, might be able to do about it. And I believe presentations like yours here today are going to be extremely helpful in making the population at large better informed about this crucial issue, because we are at a pivotal point in world history where either the nations of the world come together to protect an innocent population being slaughtered before our very eyes, or by our silence and inaction become complicit in those evil, dastardly deeds.
Well, I'm just hoping that people do take up what I have here. I mean, I can't compel anyone to do that. People have to want to see, people have to want to understand. One of the difficulties is that a lot of people, I think, are so disgusted by the news. A lot of them don't trust what they're told. They don't trust their governments for good reason. They don't trust the media for a very good reason. So a lot of them are sort of apolitical, and they sort of live in their own little world. A lot of people I talk to don't seem to be quite aware of what's going on, and a lot of them don't want to know. Better to live in their own, try to make the best of what life they have. But I have to hope that there are people who do want to do something. Now, you know, it's one thing to have stage marches and sort of flood consulates, shut everything down. These are very important public demonstrations of anger at the sheer moral depravity, the moral bankruptcy of the Western democratic world. These are great. And perhaps they may be strong enough to compel governments to realize that if they don't do something, they're going to be consigned to the political ash can of history. So I don't know if they will have an effect, but it's only one tactic. The tragedy is that something like Gaza, which right now is on the boil and is people are dying every day, and the death count is you know, it's almost like World War II proportions. But the minute that this stops, the minute there's a ceasefire, the minute there is some sort of lessening of the atrocities, people will forget about it. I mean, who remembers some Las Vegas shooter from the Monterey, from the one hotel begins with an M, I forget. Who remembers the Las Vegas shooter? That was a stage shot. It was a crock of shit. Who
yeah,
remembers?
It was the Mandalay Bay, of course.
The Mandalay Bay, that's right, the Mandalay Bay.
I've taken it apart many times.
It was a joke. I mean, the angle of the bullet wasn't even didn't even match where the floor was.
It
It
was
was the
a movie, Greg. They had a pre-recorded soundtrack of machine gun firing played over the public amplifier, and then they had visual special effects, flashing lights on the fourth floor of the Mandalay, right in the middle, higher up. Three light flashes because they intersperse some American military weaponry, which fires in three-shot blasts. The whole thing was totally fraudulent. And
Of course.
guess who owns a Mandalay Bay? MGM. And what are business are they in, Greg? Making movies.
Yeah. What is particularly noxious about this is that nobody, you have these events, but they end up dying because they're so transparently false and they're done just for shock value. Then they go and no one does anything else about it. People forget and people can't afford to forget. I remember when we had Anderson Cooper on CNN, who was an ex-CIA employee. He was an intern at the CIA for 2 years before he joined the CNN. So we can't take Anderson Cooper at face value. And I remember that he had this interview with a guy named Syrian Danny, who ostensibly was under fire in Syria, and there was this great interview. It was really impressive until you realize that the guy was sitting in a house in Brighton, and the whole thing was stage managed with sound effects, and Anderson Cooper perpetrated a fraud on his audience. Why? Well, because CNN serves Israel. CNN wants to foment war. CNN is a propaganda outfit, which I call the Clinton Narrative Network during the 2016 election. So you have, see, the problem is a lot of people don't trust what they see because they know how easily things can be faked. I mean, you had CNN, I got another CNN story where somebody is at some ostensible storm and it was shot in the studio. I mean, there is no compunction in the United States about falsifying news. And so a lot of people realize this, and smartly they don't believe anything they read, or let's hope they don't. So they tune out. And so it's one thing to be alarmed at the sheer magnitude of the death and the suffering and the wanton cruelty being inflicted upon the Palestinians. But people have to want to become part of the larger society. They have to pull themselves out of their own little world, and they have to want to participate in it. And I'm getting the sense that a lot of people are alienated from public life. Now, maybe I'm mistaken. I hope I am. Well, for example, here in Port Coquitlam, I saw a small Palestinian march go down Main Street Shaughnessy. I thought it was great. Honked my horn, said hi. So people are animated. And perhaps this massacre in Gaza will be that catalyst that the world needs to do something about this horrible stain on the human race that has been allowed to get away with murder for decades. Maybe the, I don't know.
Greg, it's
I'm
been a
just
very,
hoping.
a great privilege, but you have no concern that this is going to go away with a ceasefire. The Israelis are all in. They're
Yeah.
starving the population to finish them off. They're flooding the tunnels with seawater, which is going to contaminate freshwater wells. They're using nuclear devices. There's no way they're going to stop before they have killed or removed every single Palestinian from their own homeland for
Oh,
the
yeah.
sake of the greater good, because they do not care. They disdain human laws. They believe they're acting on the basis of God's commandments, which entitles them to lie, to steal, to cheat, to murder, to kill, even on a massive scale, such as we're witnessing today. They believe they are entitled to do it. And I'm sorry to say, the world is having a very painful learning lesson witnessing as it takes place. Final closing thoughts, my friend.
Well, as I say, I don't know how much more it'll take, but eventually somebody is going to have to send weaponry to the Palestinians or shoot at the Israelis. I mean, I thought Turkey was going to do it, but apparently that was a mistaken bit of news. I thought Erdogan was going to send a division into Palestine to defend Pal to, sorry, into Gaza to defend the Palestinians. I hope he changes his mind.
Well,
But somebody.
he has cut off gas and oil from Israel, Greg, and
Oh,
I
that's
do
good.
believe he has ambitions to lead the Arab world, and there's never been a circumstance under which he could make a greater difference than as it exists
Well,
today.
I've actually approached the Turkish consulate here in Vancouver, and I've given them the documents that I've given you, and I've asked them to send them to Erdogan or to his foreign minister to do something, and I haven't heard back yet. And
Greg, by no
for
means is this over. I bring
no.
the situation getting increasingly desperate. The world's population is increasingly incensed and overwhelmingly in opposition to the mass murder taking place in Gaza today. I believe the world will rise to the occasion. We haven't seen it yet, but with information such as that you provide, I believe it will happen yet.
Well, I sincerely hope so, because the worst thing we can do is hide behind fatuous twaddle like equality and fairness and discussions and sending out fact-finding teams. We have to
Well,
stop bullshitting and pretending that this has anything to do with a mutually hostile scenario. This is a matter of massacre. When we don't go into we blame the Congolese for the killing done by King Leopold of Belgium. Leopold of Belgium killed, I think, 8 million Congolese when Belgium ran the Congo, which I think is the second largest mass murder of human beings. I think the death of 10,000 Ukrainians by Russia was the largest.
was a
So
Russian ambassador to the United Nations that explained Russia, Israel has no right of self-defense. It is the occupying power.
yeah,
These
Sergey, yes, you're
are
right.
occupied people under their control. They have obligation to protect them that they are violating savagely in a reversal of their obligations under international law. I tell you, this cannot stand, and in my opinion, it will not stand.
Well,
And
that's
I
essentially,
predict the end will be not only the future of Bibi Netanyahu is what the existence of the entire nation of Israel at stake, but even the physical endurance of what has come to be known as Israel today.
that's essentially why it has to be expelled from the UN. And Sergey Lavrov, and I'm going to be getting in touch with him, I'm going to write in Russian to Mr. Lavrov and explain to him what he can do to further his rhetoric and to defend Russia against the calumnies from Israel. And I'm going to be doing that hopefully in the next couple of days. In the meantime,
Greg,
I do.
that's wonderful. And having you here, I say again, I'm very proud to feature you. You have been courageous, outspoken, shown enormous integrity, willing to take personal risks for the sake of the truth about this vital issue, which I regard as the greatest human rights catastrophe of our time. Greg Felton, I congratulate you. I thank you. I wish you well. And I believe a whole lot of people are going to learn a whole lot from this conversation, from your book, and from your other ongoing efforts. As a host,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
nope, yours.
Okay. The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America, and another book of mine called Exploding Middle East Myths are both available from Money Tree Publishing. Now, Exploding Middle East Myths goes into lots of ways where the Zionists control what we think and know, which I think people might find is a good complement to the political history of how the U.S. sold itself out. The third book I've written is called SARS-CoV-2, Contagion, Collusion, Corruption, where I trace the propaganda and the criminality behind the creation of the SARS-2 virus. Of note, this came out in November 2020, and it was, I've been told, the first book that looked that proved that the SARS virus was man-made. And this was at a time when anybody who said that was persecuted. But I came out in November 2020 with that, and that's at turningthetidepublishing.com. It's a very short book. I knocked it off in 6 months, did all the research, and you'd be surprised at just how threadbare and how preposterous the official narrative was when the virus was first discovered. Anyway, moneytreepublishing.com, turningthetidepublishing.com. Enjoy. I hope you like them. But
Well,
please
Greg,
call your. Go ahead.
not just hit a single, a double, a triple. You are hitting home runs, my friend, and I can't thank you enough for joining me tonight on this Real Deal Special Report. Jim
Thank you,
Fetzer,
Jim.
your host, thanking my guest, Greg Felton, for sharing his information, knowledge, and research about this terrible tragedy confronting the world today with you and me tonight. Thank you for joining us.